Hello and welcome to the Niche Guarda YouTube podcast series, powered by openbusinesscouncil.org and citiesabc.com. Once again, we are here to profile global leaders and personalities. And one of the things I love about this series is that we have continuously learning curves of especially personalities that actually can teach us how to deal with the challenges that we're facing in the world when it comes to technology and business. That brings us to our special guest of today, that is a global personality in the world of technology and cybersecurity with a big trajectory working in big international organizations and as well at TopTal, a global remote company that provides a freelancing platform connecting business with software engineers, designers, finance experts, project managers, and product managers. So I welcome to our series Michael A. Figueroa, the Senior Director of Strategy Information Security Services at TopTal. Michael Figueroa holds a BS in Brain and Cognitive Sciences from MIT and the MFS in iTech Crime Investigation from George Washington University. With 20 years of experience as a small business nonprofit leader and trusted advisor to state and federal agencies, Michael's leadership philosophy centers on forging lasting partnerships and nurturing strong collaborative relationships across diverse multidisciplinary stakeholders groups. So it's a fantastic profile, and it's an honor to have you here, Michael. Welcome to our series.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me. My name is Michael Figueroa, and I'm the Senior Director of Strategy for Information Security Services at TopTal in our technology services group. TopTal, as you said, it leads the largest freelance screen freelance platform of the top talent in the world. And it's really a pleasure to be able to work with the talent network that we have at TopTal, but really to focus on my area of profession, which is information security. I'm a longtime information security professional. I've been in this space for over 25 years at this point. Really started cutting my teeth as a kid hacker, as many of us did back then, and then just ended up organically moving more and more into the security space, really from roots in the at the usability engineering side, which we now pretty much call customer experience, but also in the data warehousing, data mining, data analytics side. Moving into security from there gives me kind of a cool sort of perspective on sort of the changes that are happening right now. I'm a former CISO. I was a CISO in early fintech industry. I've done the startup thing. I've worked for big consulting companies, and I've run a nonprofit information sharing and analysis organization called the Advanced Cybersecurity Center in my home area of the Northeast USA. And I also currently serve as a senior advisor to my home state in the US of Massachusetts, helping unlock some of the challenges we have with municipal security, and really how do we help organizations that don't have much resources? How do we help them be able to leverage what resources they do have to maximum effect? So that's really a quick sort of background into where I've come from and sort of what informs me today.
Thank you so much. And it's really an impressive profile. And of course, we're going to put your bio as well for people listening to us. So I'm particularly, so not everyone knows about TopTal, although you are a multi-billion dollars company with a huge trajectory and probably one of the most reputable platforms, probably I think the top in the world in terms of software developing talent and ecosystem. So for people that don't know so much about TopTal, and of course, my audience is highly technological, can you tell us about that, how it works, how it operates, and why it's a so important platform?
Absolutely. TopTal is it's a platform for freelance professionals to join and be connected with some of the top enterprises, top companies in the world, from enterprises all the way down to even startups. So what we really do at TopTal is we look for the best professionals in a number of domain spaces. It might be developers, it might be project managers, product managers, finance folks, and designers. But we also look for highly, highly specialized talents, like folks who are cybersecurity professionals or folks who are cloud professionals, folks who are strategy consulting professionals who have worked with the top big four firms in the world. And we bring them in and we screen them to validate that they do perform at the level that people on our network need to perform and at the level that our clients expect people on our network to perform. So to make sure that they can really accelerate themselves into a freelance consulting sort of mode. Now, the wonderful thing about having this platform is it really does draw on a global resource of talent. One of the biggest challenges that organizations face is they end up facing competition at a hyper local level. And what we do at TopTal is we allow you to and empower organizations to really get access to those in my domain space, really, and those specializations of people who are very highly qualified in their field, but they don't happen to be living in the exact hyperlocal area that the company is typically looking for when they're looking for on-site sort of talent. So by being able to tap into that global resource, what we do is we're able to grant access to those really, really top jobs for highly qualified talent who may live anywhere. So when you think about what's happened over the past few years in particular, talent want to be where they want to be. They don't want to be forced to go somewhere else. And what TopTal does is it provides that avenue for companies to be able to leverage those talent wherever they are in the world.
Well, that's very impressive. And I know that a lot of people have a lot of concerns about cybersecurity, about IP, about code, about how you take it. Actually, it's interesting. I was talking recently with a very big corporation and they panic when they say that you can work. So, and this tells us as well, partly, that a lot of companies still don't know how to use the way you guys have been working from the beginning. Mm-hmm. So as a global remote company that provides one of the biggest networks of specialized, and I would say hyper specialized, normally I think your targets is the 3%, the top 3% in the world, mm-hmm. which is quite impressive. And you work with some of the biggest brands. So, and you connect, like you said, business, software engineers, designers, finance experts, product managers, and project managers, which is very broader capacity. And mm-hmm. so let's look at the big question, which I think it's critical for most of the businesses, is how can the business and organizations work and utilize the platform to connect all these skilled professionals? Because a lot of people panic, especially when it comes to, okay, even big budgets. And you saw a lot of governments struggling how to look at this and how to skill this. So I would be this part, and I think I will put it probably in a simple way from your experience.
Yeah, it's... I mean, at the end of the day, it's really easy for organizations to leverage TopTal. We can be part of the internal sort of recruiting process. We can connect directly to hiring managers. What really needs to be in place is we just need to have an agreement with the organization that says the organization is going to leverage TopTal in order to hire freelance consulting professionals. Once we have that agreement in place, that organization is open to anyone in the organization potentially can just come to TopTal and say, hey, I have a need for this really, really difficult to find skill set. And, or I have this need for, you know, just to get surge support in a skill set we have plenty of expertise in. We just don't have the bandwidth to support it. How can TopTal help us do that? And once they do that, that kicks off a whole process at TopTal where we bring in experts to understand the client's needs at a very, very detailed level. We want to understand what are the specific kinds of tools that they're using? What are the specific kinds of environments that they're operating in? What cloud environment are they on, for example? Or are you looking for a project manager in order to help manage tasks? Or are you looking for a product manager to help develop an application? being able to look at the nuances of that with our experts, what we do is we then go to our talent network and we look for people who most completely match the needs of the client, you know, with their background, with their expertise, with their skill sets. And what we do is we actually talk to the members of the talent network. It's not just a search that the clients come in and do a search. We do the searching for them and we curate our network specific to our clients' needs. Then once we've identified one or two, maybe three professionals who have heard what we've said about what the client's problems are interested in supporting that client, and are willing to work within the term, whatever terms or constraints the client is expecting to work in, then we'll actually go back to the client and say, here are some folks who are very interested in working with you. Do any of these appeal to you? And inevitably, because we've done this white glove kind of process to lead the client and the talent through making this match, inevitably, it leads to an interview where the client will then interview the professional from our network and then offer that professional a position. The wonderful thing about what TopTal provides is it makes it very, very low lift to engage that freelance professional, because all of the billing, all of the financial aspects of it, everything is done through TopTal. So organizations don't have to worry about where the talents are located or how they're going to pay them or what currency to pay them in or any of these kinds of logistical concerns that generally slow down an organization's opportunity to be able to leverage global talent. TopTal takes care of all of that for the organization. All the organization needs to worry about is how they can keep that really, really fantastic talent engaged to keep leveraging as much of their expertise as they can.
What lessons can organizations or businesses get from your experience and achievements on this? Because, of course, you guys were ahead of the curve, because most of the decentralization that we saw in terms of business was after COVID. And even since then, people are already very careful about having people in the same place and so forth. I know that that is quite a unique strength that you have, and that's why you have so much success as well in finding the best talent in the world.
Yeah, it's basically we act the way we speak, right? Not only are we encouraging organizations to see the benefits of leveraging global talent, we do it ourselves, right? In a fully remote fashion. And yeah, I'll tell you that personally for me, when I first started engaging with TopTal about a year and a half ago, I was really concerned about it. We're kind of stuck a lot of ways in this mentality that the only way that you can truly develop a corporate culture is you have to have people together. And I'll tell you, in the times that I've been together with my teammates, where we might have an offsite or maybe I'll be traveling and I'll know that some of my teammates are in where I'm traveling to, so we'll go grab a drink or grab a meal. It's wonderful. It's wonderful to actually engage in person. But because we are an intentionally remote organization, we are not biased to that need to have physical location. Instead, we are biased towards finding the ways to engage very productively from a remote aspect. And that's one of the things that has been amazing for me in my TopTal journey is just seeing how much we've operationalized these tools that a lot of companies just really started getting exposed to during COVID. These tools were completely operationalized for TopTal from the beginning, from when we started. And started learning what is it to collaborate remotely? What is it to leverage the enterprise messaging platforms that we leverage? How do we brainstorm? How do we ideate? And which is very important in my area of determining what our strategy is going to be. It requires a lot of communication. But when we communicate very intentionally. We communicate very, very directly. We have a culture that has developed around that. So when people talk about the benefits of being together with folks, we get those benefits too when we actually are intentionally getting together. When we had a when we have a big offsite meeting, it's amazing because not only are we sometimes seeing our teammates for the first time, have engaged so closely in this really hyper-productive environment that TopTal has built as far as infrastructure is concerned, that when we see each other in person for the first time, everyone's hugging, everyone's, you know, laughing, everyone is getting together. And it we have already broken down those personal barriers where we actually really appreciate what it is to get together. And we leverage that time very, very intentionally. So I think that what I would say companies should learn from this is that in order, it's not a matter of whether or not you can develop a culture that incorporates remote people. It's a matter of intention. Do you want to incorporate remote work into your culture? If you make that decision intentionally, then you start developing the infrastructure to really, really not just support it, but to make people productive when they're doing it.
And this is, for me, probably the most important thing, I think, for companies worldwide, shifting and as well creating a lifestyle balance between work, family, and as well different parts of the world. You cannot get the talent if everyone is in one place. It's very difficult because, of course, there's a lot of diversity that you can get. And this one thing that actually has been difficult for me personally as a CEO and as an author as well, an influencer as well, it's the advantage of me being here and you are in other parts of the world, but we are here together. So these tools are amazing. And that's what TopTal has been really shifting in a great way. So talking about shifting, we are in a very special time, I would say, in history. Actually, there's a lot of people speaking about this. So technology is at the moment, as we speak, shifting at the velocity you mentioned offline about the Moore's Law. And we have the AI, blockchain, all the things about cybersecurity and cyber hacking, they are becoming increasingly much more complex to manage and cope. And this is just the beginning, let's put it that way. So in your opinion, as an expert in both strategy and cybersecurity and technology, and as well working in a multi-billion dollars company that works with people all over the world, so we have to have a lot of layers of cybersecurity as well, but as well, all these parts that are right now coming out of the AI, and especially ChatGPT, what are the most significant changes that you're thinking are going to be critical in the workforce and skill gaps? Because this is the key element, because the even the jobs that us and all of us in the industry are thinking are established, they're not established anymore, and they will change more and more.
Gosh, it's such a great question. And boy, do we live in a fascinating time, right? I think that if I were to rephrase the quote that I used earlier, it was that we're kind of facing the Moore's Law of change. Change is hyper, we are in a hyper change environment where the half-life of change is rapidly decreasing to being real time. From a security perspective, we used to talk about the idea of near real-time monitoring or real-time response. And the thing is that the change that's happening pretty much is near real-time. Our sort of prior metaphors in security fundamentally have to change. And those metaphors are those metaphors of control. When you think about security, for example, 25 years ago, we were still talking about having to erect fences around infrastructure and to stop the hackers from being able to get in. But those fences were always chain link fences. There were always ways to get through them, right? There were gates, there were holes, there were gaps, there were ways to dig underneath if you just extend the metaphor. And so we were always in a sort of reactionary mode as far as security is concerned. But we sort of got into this where we thought we could envision a world where we could actually control things. That perception of control was always a myth. And in this hyper change environment, we just have to understand that from a security perspective, our best opportunity is to try and keep up with the change by being informed about it, by having the people who are available to us to help us be informed about it, to understand how it's impacting us instead of trying to wall ourselves off from it, so that we can actually start engaging our workforce to better use it and to be better custodians of what it is to be part of a corporate culture, part of an organization's culture. There certainly are areas of control where we can influence things. I'll say, for example, data protection is probably the lowest level of control that we still have some sort of handle on. We need to be able to understand how data processes are moving, and we need to be able to put the constraints in place in order to restrict how it may move in bad ways. But we need to stop thinking about what is it to control the environment. We need to start thinking more of understanding the risks associated with the environment. So I come from a old school kind of perspective of being the risk management oriented security executive. But that really is what it is. We can only address security within a very, very small window of time. So the best opportunity that we have is to address change and adapt. We need to look at what is it that's effective, that's working right now, and how is that going to be impacted as things change, and try and anticipate what is it to kind of move with that change. I think you mentioned the ChatGPT and the generative AI side of things. That's just another example of a usage that people are going to use. If a company has not put together a usage statement for its employees as to how they can use these tools, then they've already lost the war on that, right? Because their employees are using those tools. I'm using those tools. We actually, within TopTal, we have our own interface for using those tools, along with guidelines for how we should be using them. Amazing how we can use them, but the only way we're going to completely understand, especially from a security perspective, how to defend ourselves from how they could be misused is to understand how we can best use them.
Yeah, that's the most important thing. Is it's really a lot of things that about this is about the way we don't create a wall, but we protect ourselves in an intelligent way with people and with communication. And you touched ChatGPT and of course ChatGPT and everything related to generative AI. Are now starting to create, and I think it's going to be probably the biggest disruption, is that they are democratizing the process of software development, product, project management organizations. But at the same time, not necessarily changing the jobs, they're creating new ways of working that are more effective, more advanced. So, but this has a lot of disruption, because if you are a conventional software developer that is doing in one way and suddenly you can actually get the code from ChatGPT and actually optimize different things are going to be explode in terms of the possibilities, but you still need to have the skills, and people forget that. So What are your insights about that? Because this is, of course, I'm sure, especially for an organization like yours, where actually we have a lot of case studies of people that can actually create an entire website using ChatGPT, and a lot of things are going to be even going bigger. But in the end of the day, you still need to have professionals like the top 3% that you guys are targeting. So in your case, the top 3% will be the top 3%, but this is going to create a lot of especially chaos in the way you approach the process, the project management, and even the way a business should look at code or software development. And I would like to hear, because of course, as an expert in this area, and as well in a company that is leading with the top, this is a very key element that is happening right now in the industry.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that I can speak for all of the data scientists on our network to say that they are very active. Interesting sort of time when we face these major disruptive events. But we need to understand the context of the disruption in order to understand how do we best resource. And part of my job is to help advise our clients as far as how to resource these problems amidst disruptive change. One of the jokes, of course, from an HR-oriented perspective is that you see this major technology disruption, and all of a sudden you start seeing all these job postings asking for 5 years of experience using ChatGPT or doing prompt engineering or something like that, right? And it's kind of a joke, because we see a lot, especially in the specialized spaces like security, where a job description will end up having an impossible requirement associated with it. Because of course you can't have 5 years of experience with any generative AI, because it didn't really exist in the form that it is in now. But that's not to say that it wasn't being developed, right? I worked in a machine learning context and applied to bug tracking, bug identification in software development. And I did that 5-6 years ago. I was managing a team doing that, where I was doing early machine learning work. The models that we're using now for machine learning all stem from research that has been, that's decades old. We have had people working in this space for a long time. We just happened to hit that one moment in time, that disruptive event, ChatGPT. When ChatGPT came out, it just, that was the killer app that we're always looking for new technologies. We're always looking for what's really going to appeal. It's not necessarily the best way to use the technology, but it's what has created the appeal, right? So we know that there are a lot of people, there are professionals all around the world who have been working on this problem space for a long time. Those people are getting leveraged right now through the TopTal platform, which is fantastic to see. But I also want to shift to that experience side of things. The experience side of things is really, really important to suss out, because being able to understand the experience side of things, you start to look at the fact that you don't need a data scientist for every way that you're going to apply a generative AI solution to a problem. In fact, the data science part may actually be a small component of the overall project investment that's going to be required. You're going to need, for example, full stack developers who know how to write APIs to be able to attach correctly to the OpenAI or Bard or whatever their API sets, and incorporate that into the language of the application that you're developing. You're going to need people who understand how to write questions correctly in order to leverage those large language models. They're not necessarily going to come from a data analytics background. You might find, for example, SEO experts from the marketing space are really, really good at forming queries to go against the generative AI. You're going to need finance people who are going to help you understand what the financial investment is going to need be in order to build your own models, so that you're not sending personal or protected information over to these open large language models. You're going to end up having to build your own model that is then shielding yourself from that. There's a lot of investment in infrastructure that's going to be required for that. And then you're going to need the architects and the engineers in order to build that infrastructure. So part of what I'm saying is that to be tunnel focused on just those experts who understand this new disruptive technology, but to recognize that experience is going to be organic as we start learning how to use it. And you need to, the companies that are going to be most successful are the ones that recognize that having the experience is going to be part of what's going to be developed as part of their exploration. So what they want to look for is they want to look for the key sorts of background of people who are going to be best able to gain that experience so that they can accelerate beyond the organizations that are quite frankly just going to be looking for the people who have already gained that experience, and they're going to be left behind.
This is key. And I love the way you put it, because it's an entire, well, it's a continuation, first of all, like you said, but as well, there's a restructuring right now of a lot of conventional ways, like you said, API architecture, all these different things. And this is going to create, of course, a lot of new jobs, but of course, a lot of the experts will have to work on this. And this is, I'm sure, that's the advantage that the platform like TopTal brings, because you guys have much more intelligence, much more data to deal with these things, even to find immediately a talent around these areas. So when it comes to AI, and especially AGI, augmented general intelligence, for the people less knowledgeable, we are creating really new paradigms. And these new paradigms will have a huge impact in our businesses, like we just spoke, in terms of process, in terms of the way we deal with data, we deal a lot of things. But the problem, and I think the challenge, is how we can apply this to business process, and especially all the things related to cybersecurity and risk management. So how can we look at these skill gaps effectively that business have nowadays? And especially, like you said, you've been working on this for 5 years, but most of things like ChatGPT is less than 1 year. It started in November 2022. We are in middle of 2023. So we're talking something that changed the entire world in less than 8 months. So this is actually a velocity loss more on steroids, but it's going to create a lot of opportunities, challenges, and risks. So how do you look at this from the perspective of skills and from the perspective of business? You touched the history, but I would like to go more right now. If I'm a business owner, I want to hire developers, or if I want to work with top talent, this, because these platforms like yours are the most important things, and there's not a lot of platforms like yours, let's put it that way.
Yeah. And it can be a really overwhelming event. As somebody who has been in the startup world, it can be really overwhelming to understand, how do I even get started, right? I don't completely understand the technology, but then again, nobody does, right? We're still looking for that killer usage of the technology. Right now, the technology is in this exploratory phase of usage. And that's a really fantastic area to be in for somebody who's a strategist, because there's so much discovery going on right now. And I think that it's that discovery exercise that, for a business owner, to your point, it can be really overwhelming. How do you even hire in that environment to understand, to have that sort of understanding? You know, what kind of expert are you looking for? And I think that that's really, when you go to the heart of your question regarding skills, times, especially from a legacy hiring kind of environment, a lot of times we think about, who's that one first hire that we need to make? And that's great, that works in a lot of ways. But how long is it going to take you to get that first hire? Are you going to focus that first hire on being a data analytics, a data architect who has some analytics background to help you sort of scope how your business can incorporate this new regime? Are you going to hire information security, say a virtual CISO, to help you understand how, if you start moving in that direction, are you going to start protecting yourself from intellectual property theft, for example, or start protecting from data leakage when using these technologies? That's where things get really, really challenging. And when you think about how long it's going to take you to even take that first step of bringing that person in, and the investment of cost and your time in doing that, you could be, in this current environment, maybe taking 3 to 6 months in order to bring that first person in. And in 3 to 6 months, to your point, ChatGPT changed the world in a matter of a couple months. What's going to happen in the next 3 to 6 months that's going to, you're going to miss because you're focused on finding that right person as opposed to experimenting? And that's one of the powers that a platform like TopTal provides, is that we can help organizations really accelerate. For example, we have a technology advisory component where our clients can come to us and say, I really need a data science advisor who has worked in the healthcare space to just help me get my mind around this. Can I have a workshop, maybe like a 4-hour sort of discovery session, brainstorming session with one of your experts, just to get my mind around this? Yes, we can provide that. We can provide that. And then we can go all the way to helping provide a team of people who have the full stack development expertise, the product management expertise, the project management expertise, the infrastructure engineering expertise, and yes, the data science expertise. We can provide a whole team to help build that solution for our client. So I think that one of the things that I really advocate for is, what is it to accelerate into the change versus attempt to shepherd the exchange, the change. And if you're going to try and do the latter, you're just going to be left behind in this hyper-change environment.
Excellent answer. And really, I think our audience can learn a lot from this because this is the key element. So that brings me to the next question that is precisely a follow-up on this one. So top tech organizations, companies and startups and their software and product developers need continuous learning. That's what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. And as well, professional development to bridge the skill gaps. So one of the things that really is quite impressive in TopTal is that you have a huge community with over 238 events just last year. So that mm-hmm. means it's almost 2 events per month and all over the world. You can just go to the website. So what insights do you have on this? Because this is kind of, there's this continuous skills, but as well the network. And you guys have both, but how do you look at the insights of this continuous learning and professional developing through the platform, through the community, and through the expertise that you guys have?
Yeah, and that's a great question that comes from our clients all the time. How do our freelancers, how can we validate or how do we encourage our freelancers to really keep their skills strong? And we do that in a number of ways. You mentioned events. We host hackathons on specific subject matter where we just bring members of our talent network together in some city around the world, you know, where we have clusters of very, very talented professionals. And then we'll host a 3-day hackathon to on a problem space and have them work together, learning from each other, but actually working to solve the kind of problems that our clients are facing. And that's the way we kind of frame it. We give them those opportunities. And then when a member, when a talent is part of the TopTal network, they also gain access to all kinds of other opportunities for learning where they can tap into other specialists within our communications channel to learn from them. We host webinars. We host Ask Me Anythings of people who are working in some of these spaces and so that they can learn from each other. We also provide incentives for education in really, really in-demand areas where perhaps we'll actually put together a training program for them, or we'll identify a certification that our clients are seeing in big demand, and we'll actually provide incentive for our talents to go get that certification so that those organizations can pull on those talents for those skill sets. So I think that what we do is we think about the independent professional differently. We think about not creating a platform that they can log into and look for jobs. We are trying to create an experience where freelancers can learn from each other, where they gain additional experiences from each other, where they have their understand what the market trends are and are able to pursue ways to be able to catch on to those market trends. And yes, they get to work for companies that they might not have access to, which gives them a whole new realm of experience that then they can leverage moving forward. So it's all part of what we would consider a talent success sort of methodology. Our objective is not just to bring people into the network. In fact, as you said, top 3% of professionals around the world, in order to get to that top 3%, we're letting a lot of people fail out of the process of coming into the TopTal network. Coming into the TopTal network is not easy. Once you're there, we want our talent to succeed at getting those jobs, at getting their careers, at really expanding their horizons. So think of it as our job in part is to nurture our talent network so that it continues to deliver to our clients' needs.
Yeah, and it's really impressive. I suggest people listening to us to look, for instance, in the network of blog posts and blog, even you have hubs for a lot of different areas of expertise. Mm-hmm. I've been learning actually on this. I've been accompanying the platform for years, and it's really impressive what you put together. So let me ask you a more personal question for you from your personal background. So as someone that's been on technology all your career, and like you mentioned, from startup to big corporations, fintech, cybersecurity, which are probably the most sensitive areas because it touched money and touched security. What are some of the recommended strategies for tech professionals and for business as well to stay grounded Because like you said, the challenge right now is, of course, not every company will be innovative like what you guys are, or like ChatGPT, mm-hmm. or like Microsoft, because there's billions of dollars. Not everyone can compete with that. Even in metaverse technology or blockchain or AI, things changes all the time. So from your experience, what kept you grounded? Because grounded is a key element. And as well, to deal with disruption, you need to be very down to earth, but prepared. Mm-hmm. So I would like to look at this, how you look at these threads, and how you look at this keeping grounded.
Yeah, it's a great question. I get it every once in a while. I'm going to be a little biased for a moment. I am a security professional, after all, longtime security professional, and say that security professionals are the best at this of anyone. We succeed. Anybody who's been in security for more than 5 or 6 years has proven their ability to succeed amidst not just change, but against malicious change, against adversarial change, right? Because we operate in an environment where people are constantly trying to break everything that we've done. That is just the reality of being a security person. You end up developing a really thick skin and appreciating the value of failure. I live by an adage that you should be judged more by how you respond to a problem than by the fact that the problem actually happened. And so in the current environment, I think that it's really informative for me to be able to convey how important resilience is. When we're dealing with disruptive change, like in technology, a lot of things have happened in my career that were very, very disruptive. We had a lot of technology change. I grew up in security, working in data centers and running cables and wires in data centers and working with big giant servers. And now everything is cloud-based, and I have never directly interacted with infrastructure at the cloud level. My experience is all with big boxes, right? That was a significant change, a shift in mindset that we're still going through today. A lot of the legacy organizations, you pointed out, financial organizations are still struggling with what does it mean to take advantage of the cloud. And I work with several of our financial clients and helping them understand what security looks like in that sort of domain space. When we're looking at from a professional perspective, and I'm saying from an individual perspective, I would say probably the number one skill I lean on the most is curiosity. I allow myself to discover. I allow myself that opportunity to use ChatGPT. I'm not going to just immediately isolate myself from it and try and isolate my environment from it. I'm going to go use it and start practicing with it. Then I'm going to share some of my findings with folks, and we're going to start learning together. And I think that being a tech professional in an environment of hyper change means you have to keep learning about what things are, even within your context. My context as a strategist now, or a security executive, I'm not going to be the person people are calling to develop new solutions on this, but I should be knowledgeable enough about how it's going to impact my environment so that I can advise people on it. And, you know, I still connect to some of my roots. I also am very involved with our data analytics practice, even though I run our information security practice. Data analytics is, of course, a huge, huge area right now. And since I have a background in it, then I'm starting to focus attention on that. As part of that, I still do my own reporting. I still do my own spreadsheet reporting. I still collect my own data, and I look at data in different ways, and I practice my data visualization skills. I still write code from time to time, and I'm a terrible coder. I'm a hacker. Hackers don't write good code. They just write the code that they need to work. And but I still do that to practice those core skills. And every once in a while, maybe I'll learn a new language, or maybe I'll set up a little lab environment so I can test out some new techniques. But that all comes from that root sort of competency of curiosity. Being curious and not being afraid of change, but embracing that change so that you can be as well informed about how it's going to impact what it is you do, and so that you can understand what does it mean for you to change with it?
Yeah, I love this. And that sincerity is very important, especially for young people, because a lot of people think things happen by accident. It's a lot of persistence and curiosity and resilience, I think, is a key element. So that brings me next question. So let's look at the potential benefits of using AI, especially when you look at business and when it comes to deal precisely with products and cybersecurity, because of course, that's probably the biggest elephant in the room is, okay, is going to this disrupt everything? Is going to this to, can you hack anything? And as well, what would see from your side the biggest challenges and the risks you see associated with that? Because definitely this is the biggest thing that is changing the world. And of course, some cases panicking a lot of people in governments.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of panic going on. And I fall back on the core competency I just discussed, which is curiosity, right? We have had this argument about AI for a long time in theoretical circles, especially from an ethics-oriented perspective. And really from the perspective of, should we even be developing what it is we're developing, because it could be used badly. Technology has a history of having technologies of bringing about disruptive technologies that can be used badly. And we're going to continue to do that, right? That is the wonderful thing about being human, in my mind, is that we continue to push those boundaries, right? We don't always succeed in the best of ways. From a security context, I'll tell you, every good security technology has a very, very bad usage of it. When I go back to my roots, and I'm going to really date myself here, but when you look at one of the big root kits, which is a piece of software that allows an attacker to be able to infiltrate a computer and use resources on that computer or misuse resources on that computer. One of the original root kits was created by a hacking collaborative called the Cult of the Dead Cow. And this is 20 some odd years ago that they developed this. And system administrators looked at this tool and go, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Imagine having the access to computers to be able to control resources like this. That started out as a hacker tool that became essentially a underground system administration tool for people, right? Metasploit is another great example that formed a great company, evolved into a great company called Rapid7. But Metasploit is a penetration testing tool that hackers use in order to break into systems, right? We're used to technologies being misused in security. Just because it can be misused doesn't necessarily mean we shouldn't be curious about how we can use it. I think that a lot of the talk around generative AI, there's good conversation going on right now about misuse. We need to be having those conversations because it's good for us to establish a consensus idea as to what the guardrails should be. Once we can establish that consensus idea as to what the guardrail should be, then we can establish protocols to make sure that we're staying true to what those guardrails are. But we should not be afraid. That's not in our nature to be afraid of advancement. That is sort of the roots of that, I believe, are in a anti-science narrative that we should not continue to progress because eventually we will destroy. That has been proven true of some technologies. But the vast majority, those of advanced technology, of progress in the technology space, has been useful to us. It's increased productivity, it's increased discovery, and even generative AI. What generative AI is going to be able to do right now, we've got the large language models, which is just scratching the surface. They're helping us understand how language is constructed, and we're able to find bits of information based on that association of language pieces. But once we start tying that together, we figure out how we can tie that together with the data we're collecting, with our understanding of our environment, of the climate of discovery in healthcare with new vaccines and cancer research and all of this, we're going to start breaking all kinds of boundaries. And all of a sudden, these areas of research where we've been banging our heads, researchers have been banging their heads for years, if not decades, on certain problems, we're suddenly going to accelerate the timeframe for discovery using these technologies that most certainly can be misused. But misuse should never be a barrier for us being able to discover what it is we can do with them.
Excellent answer. It's really very inspiring as well, because I think it's the key element is this inspiration and down-to-earth approach. And for me, it's actually the biggest thing we have, because the lack of looking at the problems and as well just the panic, or then the laziness of lack of science approach, like it can create a lot of problems. And a lot of companies are failing because of that. So that, mm-hmm. that brings us actually for my next question, that is precisely ethical and legal considerations. And I know that it's a quite technical question, but I appreciate you being fantastic on the answers. So especially as we have SaaS and PaaS, so software as a service and platform as a service, in the case of TopTal is exactly a platform as a service, but as well, it comprehends a lot of software as a service, which is mostly of the world economy, let's put it that way. How do you see the ethical and legal considerations? Part of what you touch a bit of the ethicals, but a bit going a bit further, because of course, right now, and for people listening to us, ethicals, okay, can I use data to get intelligence around my competitors? Can they get about me? Can I actually as well, what legal considerations? Because in the end of the day, ChatGPT will have, it's getting lawsuits around the world because it's scrapping data from all over the world, but it's not just them. Everyone is doing that. So how can we look at this in a practical way and actually create new business, but be prepared as well, especially for a startup or a company doesn't have the expertise that of course companies like yours and others have?
It's such an incredible question because it really does go to a root of how do you take advantage of disruptive change, especially in technology, right? I think that there's generally a mentality in the startup space that you ask for forgiveness, not for permission. In startups, especially in disruptive times like what we're facing right now, founders are going to pursue a direction and going to ignore that question. That has yielded a lot of success. It'd be very, very challenging to manage once the ecosystem starts getting infected with that, right? And I think that when you look at what it is, when you're talking about the platforms and the SaaS and the applications and what's being made available, I look at the first thing that pops into my mind, for example, is deepfake technology. And the fact that AI, for example, a key case that we face at TopTal directly, as far as AI is concerned, is of course, we interview people to come into our network. And now we need to understand, are they using generative AI to, for example, answer our questions, right? As we're interviewing them to validate their experience. All the way to, is that person we're interviewing actually real? Or is it just an AI itself, right? And we have that access to various different pieces and we start putting it together, we're going to see those opportunities for misuse. From an ethics perspective, I generally think that we have different tiers of ethics, right? We have different context, I should say, as far as ethics is concerned. When you think about ethics, for example, within a United States sort of construct, one of the big discussions right now within the US context is about freedom of speech, right? Using the deepfake example, is a deepfake, is it ethically wrong? And there's a lot of nuance to understanding that. I think it's ethically wrong. But that doesn't necessarily mean that as far as a societal construct it is. And that takes some sort of philosophical critical thinking to make those determinations. When you look at a European-oriented context, one of the big aspects right now, we know from the actions that Italy took with regard to ChatGPT, is privacy. What is it to be taking data or taking a prompt from a person and then storing that prompt not being able to relieve it from the training model when somebody comes to say, I don't want you to be storing my data anymore. Is it ethical for that organization to say, we'll remove it in the next training model that we're going to do next year or something like that? So I think that valid for us to be having that conversation. At the end of the day, I think that we need to be acting like we have the best intentions. And that means we should be accepting that organizations do have the best intentions, but maybe not the imagination of how things can be misused. And that's one of the biggest challenges that we have in the security space with connection to especially disruptive change, is I often say that your ability to secure your environment is only limited by your own imagination. We need to be able to use and be curious about how to use these technologies so that we can allow our imagination to expand, to understand those misuse cases and begin having those conversations around the ethics of how do we use these new platforms. That is the only way, having that transparency, having that curiosity, and then having the bandwidth of context to be able to do that. One of the things I talk about with relation to working at TopTal is on a daily basis, I'm working with people around the world. I have never worked in an environment where I am so exposed to global thinking. Being exposed to people around the world gives us that opportunity for a different context so that it can help enable and broaden our imagination. And that's really an opportunity that we have, that organizations have using TopTal can bring, is they can bring in that diversity of thought to that conversation so that they're not so focused on their own context. They actually do have the ability to bring in additional context and really start addressing those very difficult questions.
Well, that is a fantastic answer, and I subscribe completely, and that it helps a lot understanding the complexity. But as well, this is going to be, of course, shifting and taking a lot of new ways as we get forward. So looking at what you just said, so for instance, from the ethical practices, how can these organizations and business that we are all talking and we are part of it, maintain these ethical practices while hiring and implementing these tech measures? Because a lot of the challenges, we like you said, there's the overview that this is right now, everyone understands the challenges of this, and you actually touch fantastic ways. But especially when it comes to work with top freelancers, and this is actually for any company around the world, because if you hire a freelance and you don't do a good MOU or a good NDA or a good stuff, you can get in serious trouble. So an organization like yours has all the practice and all the different structure in place to protect. But for people listening to us, how can we actually maintain this ethical practice of hiring, implementing this and keeping the code? Because a big challenge is, okay, what is my code? What is my IP? Actually, I had a talking with an investor and friend, and he was asking me, but everyone right now is using code from other code from other code. So where is the IP? And I think this is the biggest challenge. Okay, what is the ethicals, but as well, where is the basis and the background of this?
It's really challenging in this decentralized world that we're now in, right? I would say that number one, organizations, it's my previous comment about context, about building that context. The context of what's going to be ethically sound within an organization is driven by culture, right? It's driven first by culture. Is the organization behaving in the way that it wants its employees to model? And does it incentivize employees to model that behavior? That is true regardless if you're remote or if you're working in an office space. People are going to naturally align to the culture. And if the culture is one of, for example, curiosity, openness, asking hard questions, and challenging context, then you're going to naturally end up having, I think, a much more sort of consensus as what does the ethical framework look like within the organization. But to your point, as far as hiring, hiring a freelance professional or hiring an employee it's going to be a very, very similar answer, right? You are looking for people who are going to abide by the ethical standards of your organization. When you look at intellectual property theft, insider attacks, as we call it in a information security context, almost certainly is a perception that if somebody isn't in the office, if you're pulling somebody remotely, and if that person is a freelance professional, then they're going to have fewer boundaries, personal boundaries, at adversely impacting that organization's proprietary information, culture, et cetera. But that really is operating under some false assumptions. And the primary false assumption there is that somehow that freelance professional is in more of a headspace, has lower ethical standards or simply different ethical standards of the organization. But that does not take into account the fact that that freelance professional is functioning where they want to be and getting access to the top employers in the world. That freelance professional has much more incentive to behave properly within the context of the ethical structure of that organization, because they want to continue to get paid by this organization while being able to be where they're at for whatever reason that they are, whether they're limited to that space, whether they choose to be there, or et cetera. That is a really powerful incentive for them to behave properly. And in fact, I know a lot of, especially our security professionals within the Top Talent Network, one of the first things that some of them will ask new clients is, for example, what password manager are you using right now? Or what is the VPN I should be using to log in to your environment? And a password manager being a piece of software that's storing the passwords for accessing the environment, a virtual private network or a VPN being the way that they're connecting their computer to that environment. And a lot of times clients are thrown off when they're asked that question, because the professional is already trying to establish a strict guideline for what is it for them to engage with that organization, right? So I think that when we look at it from that perspective, understanding that sourcing means you're entering into an environment of people who already have a significant incentive to behave properly for you. And once you start understanding that shift of context, then the other pieces start falling into place as to what are the controls that you can put in place in order to validate that those people are behaving properly and all of that. And then just recognizing you are incorporating them into your culture. So how do you incorporate them into your culture so that they understand what your boundary conditions are? And that's the question that I think that a lot of companies are starting to really appreciate as they're starting to engage with TopTal.
Well, fantastic. It's a masterclass. And I think everyone listening to us is really, I'm talking completely with honesty, is really great insights and shows as well the deep level of expertise. And I thank you for sharing with our audience, Michael. But in terms of... these things are really not easy, okay? And there's a lot of layers that I would suggest people to look. And this is, I would say, if you mm-hmm. solve these problems, at least you are prepared for the next 5-10 years, but you have to create the process how to take it forward. So that brings me, you are in the last three questions. So I appreciate, Michael, your expertise and sharing with our audience. I don't mind to take, I'm not like Lex Fridman that goes for 3 hours, but I think it's good that we share great knowledge here, and it's amazing. And these are kind of interviews that are great to sometimes to listen twice. Is a masterclass, as I said. So I want to touch right now on one area that, of course, has been a massive hype, now a bit less hype, but it's the metaverse and the Web 3.0, mm-hmm. depending on how you want to see it. So as these two areas are ingressing our lives, and actually our CTO talks about 3D of the internet. So at the moment, and as well, the idea of gaming, immersive experiences. So this is going to create an entire much more advanced internet that with the AI and mm-hmm. immersive experience and 3D and a bit of Star Wars or Star Trek, depends on the narrative we can build. So this brings a lot of new variations, and companies like yours are already partly doing that. But for instance, Roblox, if you have children between, let's say, between 6 and 10, they are all on Roblox, mm-hmm. which is already immersive experience with avatars and all these different things. And you don't even need to go to crypto or more crazy stuff. But this is mainstream right now. There's 600 million, 700 million people every day playing on these things, most of them children. But if you go in gaming, it's 3.5 billion people, which is mm-hmm. half of the population in the planet. So these variations are bringing a sense of gamification, rewarding, and immersive internet. Yeah. But ironically, most of people don't understand it, especially when you talk about metaverse, especially because of Meta. There's a lot of myths, a lot of as well lack of perception, and Web3 even probably is more blurred. So what do you see the new possibilities, opportunities, and challenges that come with especially these two areas, metaverse and Web 3.0?
I think that when we look at these sorts of new, let's call it user technologies, right? This is our interaction with the systems and how that interaction is changing. I look at my own kids, for example. I have one kid in university right now. I have another one who is going to be in high school next year. And I'm always fascinated, and this is part of my being a cognitive psychology undergrad, focused on human-machine interaction, fascinated by how native kids of this generation are with the technology around them. And it's really appealed to me in certain ways when I look at some of these new innovations. I look at these new innovations and think, I don't have the proper context to understand how it's being used or how it can be used or where the direction is, because I'm not a digital native. My kids revel in my stories of my first cell phone that we just kept in the car and only used for emergencies, right? They revel in this idea of not having a computer at home, you know, and of course I've got they have 4 or 5 different devices, and they are just fundamental experts at using those devices for anything from doing their homework to doing digital art to doing music production to doing video production, and they're so quick about producing, and then in the games. Everything is gamified right now, to your point. There's all this, our kids are completely embedded in this badging culture, right? Where each little accomplishment earns you a badge, right? And that little badge, it represents a little bit of a dopamine drip to go, oh, I need to go get the next badge. That's going to fundamentally change how we, I'm going to say this from a liberal arts oriented perspective, but how we tell stories. Stories are no longer going to be linear. Stories are now going to be more of what I grew up with in books, what we would call a choose your own adventure. You're going to go from one place to another place to another place, and your pathway of discovery is going to be different with what's available now than anybody else. You are going to have a unique experience with that environment. And how that translates to the business world means that we need to start expecting that our consumers, our users, our clients, they are each going to be looking for, as this generation gets older, they are going to be looking for what is it that the next badge is? How do they get that little bit of incentive? That next level of incentive. And we need to start thinking about how we deliver services to our customers, to our employees, to incentivize the behaviors that we're trying to get them to model. And I think that that's really where the technologies are taking us, is when you take a look at the Web3, the metaverse, et cetera, it's providing a very, very granular sort of attribute for what does each individual pathway look like, and how is it going to be visualized? In order to understand that, we're going to need to be curious. We need to get into the technologies. We need to explore them. We need to understand them from our perspective. I might look at a metaverse from a security perspective and say, just imagine what a security operations center would look like if I can move through it in a massively 3D oriented way. And then I can see, for example, who's at what stage a discovery process that I'm at, and be able to then interact with them very organically about how did they get there? What was their pathway to it? Because I know it's going to be different from mine. That is going to just give us a much more massive breadth of context of how we operate and succeed in sort of accomplishing our goals, both from a business perspective and from a individual perspective. And I think at the roots, gaming technology always represents the next, what's going to happen as far as business 10 years from now. So when we think about that, when we look at, for example, Tears of the Kingdom, the Zelda Tears of a Kingdom, which I'm I unfortunately have already put a number of hours in, it's not this technology orientation, but it is kind of that open world concept of allowing people to discover their own pathways for solving problems, for solving puzzles, that is modeled on what those technologies are teaching us to do when we're interacting with new technology. So I think ultimately at the end of the day, what that's going to do is that's going to really drive our opportunity to discover new pathways to solve, solve problems. And that discovery, the invention that's going to come from that is just going to be absolutely incredible.
Well, fantastic. And I think it's not unfortunately, I think the time you spend in some of these things is a great learning curve. So especially you mentioned Zelda, but it's a great masterpiece in terms of creativity, gamification, and technology. Come on, there's thousands, millions of people playing this game. So that's a learning curve. And actually the world population is on this. So I mean, the last two questions, it's been a fantastic journey. I'm very excited. I've been learning a lot as well. So let's look at, this is a micro question, so feel free, and you touched some areas, but feel free to answer all you see. So we talk about the present trends and the biggest things that are really shifting technology. But when it comes to future trends, okay, how you see these future trends and some of the challenge and information technologies, and how you see this, and especially someone that has a fantastic experience and passion that have been showing us so far.
Gosh. Generative AI is just killing any sort of visibility into the future right now, right? We're in the midst of what I would say that is the fog of war of disruptive technology. Everything is about generative AI and what is it? But if I were to look at where the trends are going, one of the things that I'm very fascinated about is smart infrastructure. What is it? We were talking about pathways a moment ago and how we're going to discover new pathways. What's it going to be now to have a sort of embedded smart infrastructure concept where everyone is communicating with everyone within a given space? And what does that mean from a data flow perspective, from a organizing people perspective, from a managing traffic perspective, managing building permits perspective, you know, doing all of that in our physical spaces. How is this technology going to impact our physical environment? We already know from a remote work perspective, it has significantly changed our perspective on what is it to be to have to have operate in a given location, right? What happens when that location becomes part of a smart infrastructure? I think that that's going to be very, very fascinating from a from just a sharing perspective, from a user experience perspective, from a interacting with our environment perspective. I think that we are probably on the cusp of seeing some really, really fascinating new advancements in that space, specifically coming from how much automotive is moving into that smart car kind of mode. So I think that smart infrastructure is one of those things. What that's ultimately going to drive is it's going to allow us to start exploring our world in ways that we have never been able to do before. When you look at just from a global oriented perspective, we humans understand the land really well. We do not understand the water very well. And with the new sorts of communication technologies that are coming out, the new how quickly we're able to adapt to changing conditions from a construct perspective, et cetera, I have a feeling that we're going to start discovering whole new ways to leverage the water around us, the vastness of the water on this planet of ours. And when we look at things like how the climate is changing, how the sea levels are rising and all that stuff, it's going to become very important for us to be able to have a much better understanding of how do we incorporate that those water boundaries into our lifestyles. When you think about technology disruption, I think that that smart infrastructure extended to expanding our physical environment, what we're able to live in, is going to be, we've got some incredible discoveries coming in the next 20 years.
I completely subscribe, especially smart infrastructure. Smart infrastructure is a big passion of mine. For people in my YouTube channel, they know that smart cities, or smarter cities, I like to talk about it. And actually, mm-hmm. I recently did something in the House of Lords. It's a key element because all the cities, all the infrastructure are going to be key. And for instance, what we've been talking about, these platforms, it's just happening. But I think one of the challenges, and this is our last question, so I'm going to be probably a bit broader here, but one of the things I've been finding is, and I want to share this with you and the audience, especially bear in mind that it's about TopTal, and it's an organization I've been admiring for a long time, is the challenge right now that we have is when you look at what we discuss in this call, for instance, you and me, of course, are passionate about teas. We are global personalities in this area. But the rest of people is really scared. I've been working with prime ministers, governments, House of Lords, and the governments around the world, from premium countries to emerging markets. And the challenge is that people have no clue about this. And the challenge is that this is not stopping. It's just going to be bigger. So you're going to have a lot of layers of understanding, non-understanding, people questioning. And a lot of sometimes you can get in a lawsuit because people don't have a clue what you're talking about. I had, for instance, a case of not going to details, but I want to share with the audience, and I want to ask you this in the context of my last question, is that people seeing a software and say, no, I cannot believe it's not true. And this happened, okay? So it's not something science fiction. I'm not talking about people that are not sophisticated. I'm talking about public companies. So this brings me to the company. So when it touches this kind of the paradox of mass adoption of technology and non-adoption, and there's another paradox. There's an interview I did with one of the most eminent futurists in the world. They were saying at the moment we have digital obesity. And this brings a lot of questions from companies that, first of all, everyone has an idea because everyone is using an iPhone or a very sophisticated Samsung or smartphone. So everyone knows about technology, whatever they want or not. But at the same time, when it comes to social media, then people have already a lot of discussions. And then there's the myths about what is scientific, what you find in YouTube. Then it comes to businesses and organizations. That is, okay, how am I going to hire my top professionals? How am I going to keep pace with all these different things? And is this an interview, of course, about TopTal? And I really am a huge fan, and I'm saying this with all my respect. So how can we look at the advice, because that's the biggest question, is that's the biggest elephant in the room, is that you can only build a successful business, and especially with all this disruption, with the best top professionals. But it's very difficult because, like you said, there's cultural backgrounds, people working remotely, and as well keeping productivity, keeping pace with disruption, keeping pace even with things that even governments are panicking. So how are the, and you touch a lot of things during the interview, but there's the last probably piece of advice and pearls of wisdom. How can we look at the very down-to-earth advice, how to look at this, whatever you are, a startup, a medium company, even a big company, and people listening to us, of course, are C-level, or at least people that want to be C-level, how we would look at these things? Because that's the key element to go the basics. And I would like to, I always like to finish with the practicalities.
Absolutely. And I think that the core theme is to be prepared to move quickly. How would an organization be prepared to move quickly? And I think that you kind of framed it from when you from startup to, you know, established business sort of range. And I'll talk about startups first and primarily. We're in a midst, especially within the technology industry right now, of an incredible resource disruption, right? A lot of companies are laying off people and letting people go. Those people are sitting idle. It's taking them longer in order to get jobs than they otherwise would, because there aren't a lot of companies that are actively hiring. And then when they are hiring, the companies are very skittish and they're putting them through multiple rounds of interviews, et cetera. It's a very, very challenging environment to be a tech professional in right now. But what we do know from every other time when there was a significant tech staffing disruption is a number, some fraction of those people who were let go are going to come together and start forming new companies. And we're going to start seeing the results of those new companies here coming in the next 3 to 6 months. Those companies, their success is going to be defined on how quickly they're able to take advantage of the change. How quickly are they able to accelerate as the market begins to turn back? Because we know it's going to turn back. It always does. It's just a matter of re-baselining and then figuring out what those next pathways are going to be. If those startups are waiting to hire the right people, it's going to take them longer and they're going to miss the acceleration curve. But those companies that are able to tap in to expertise that they don't necessarily have right at hand and are able to do that quickly and in a much more nimble and agile fashion as what a network like TopTal provides, then those founders will be able to focus on the core business problems that they're trying to solve first and let others worry about what is it to build the pieces of that the founders don't necessarily understand how to do. So that then translates to the larger companies. So the larger companies, they're not stopping business. Business is continuing, right? They are talking right now about what are those next objectives? What are the next business objectives? What are the next technology investments?
That's much more questions I have. Definitely, I'm going to get a take two, because especially in the cybersecurity, there's a lot of more things. But I think from the context of my audience and the different areas, I would suggest. So I want to thank you for this inspiring part as well. Thank you, TopTal, for the fantastic work. Like I said, just the website, go to the website, check the community, check the events. I think the events is a fantastic thing. Like you mentioned, Michael, just the fact that you guys are doing around almost 300 events per day, per year, it's quite impressive. But as well, there's a lot of TopTal leaders. And just that, for instance, people, sometimes I have students coming to me, how can I learn these things? But as well, industry experts that have no clue how to work on this. So this is a great way. And I hope that what we discussed here today can help a lot of people work with platforms like TopTal, but as well, get dive on this, because you're not going to change. It's going to be bigger. So I want to appreciate your time and thank you so much for being here.
Thanks so much for having me. It's been fun, and I really appreciate the deep dive.